Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. With the granting of the Forest Stewardship Council certification to Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Canada is now the world's leader in the amount of certified forest. For Simon Dyer, Roger Allman, and Anthony Marcel, it's a job well done and a significant step towards forest sustainability. And Dr. Peter Robertson is leaving his position as the head of TAC Edmonton. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. One innovative certification program that's beginning to make inroads into the forest products industry is that run by the Forest Stewardship Council. The FSC logo is an assurance that the manufacturer or the primary producer has met the rigorous standards set by the Forest Stewardship Council, thus demonstrating its commitment to environmental, social, and economic sustainability. Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, a producer of aspen pulp in northeastern Alberta, is the most recent forest company in Canada to receive FSC certification. But getting it is not easy. Simon Dyer is a forest ecologist with Alberta Pacific.
Well, Cheryl, it's been a five-year process. ALPEC first investigated FSC certification five years ago, and since then we've been following the process very closely. At the time, there were no standards for the FSC for the National Boreal here in Canada. So we assisted in the development of standards with the environmental community and Aboriginal groups and social groups. And 2 years ago, there was a standard, a 200-page set of rules that a forest company would have to meet in a voluntary way to be able to use the FSC certificate. So it's been a long process.
Once you got this all set in motion, you actually had to go through the certification process. What was involved there, and what's been the result now?
Well, FSC doesn't actually certify forests. They accredit certifiers like Smartwood or KPMG who go out and assess a company's practices. So the Smartwood team, which consisted of five representatives, a forester, an ecologist, a socioeconomist, an Aboriginal representative, and the team leader, came out to ALPAC in November of last year and spent 2 weeks touring our forestry operation. They spent time in the forest looking at our practices on the ground, interviewing stakeholders, and spent time in the office going through our books to demonstrate whether we could be FSC certified.
You have that certification now. What does that mean for ALPAC?
Well, it's really good news for ALPAC. This is the first forest company in the Western Canadian Boreal Forest to achieve FSC certification. We're also the world's largest FSC certified forest, so it's a really big deal. The FSC standards are based on the combination of environmentally appropriate, socially equitable, and economically viable forestry. So it involves exemplary performance in all these areas. Some things we could talk about on the ground are things like ALPAC deferring areas from harvest to set aside as conservation areas, establishing old forest reserves, the requirement for consultation with communities. There's a whole host of best practices that involve forestry.
What part does science play in this?
Science plays a really important role in the process. The National Boreal Standard, FSC Standard, uses the Natural Disturbance Model, which is a science-based approach to forest management, as its foundation. Lots of scientists were interviewed in the process, and all the standards that FSC sets are based on a combination of science and stakeholder input.
With the certification, does that mean you have like a 100% passing grade?
No, all FSC certificates come with something called conditions. That is, it understands that no forest company is perfect and there's always room for improvement. So when the assessors visited ALPAC's forest, they assessed us against 200 different indicators of good forest management. And of those, approximately 180 of them, we passed with flying colors. But there were 23 where they identified some room for improvement. And with these are a condition that we have to address over the next 5 years and will be revisited by Smartwood over the next 5 years to demonstrate that we're making progress on those conditions.
What might those conditions be?
Well, there are a few. I can talk perhaps about some of the environmental conditions and then some of the social conditions. Some of the environmental ones, for instance, alpacas always left standing trees in cut blocks for wildlife habitat, but we've never really had a good mechanism of measuring how many trees we've left. So Smartwood have said that we need to develop that strategy, and we're already using aerial photography to try and demonstrate next time Smartwood visit us next year that we're able to report on how many trees we leave. Other things we need to work on are these ecological benchmark areas, which are deferral areas that ALPAC sets aside from forest harvest, and then we're going to measure these and compare them to the working landscape. We need to work with other stakeholders, particularly the government and other industry, to see if there's support for these things to be permanently protected. Now perhaps I could talk about some of the social conditions. There's a strong requirement in FSC certification for public and community participation and involvement in forest management planning. We have an excellent public advisory group, our task force, that contributes and helps us develop our management plan. However, the assessors found that some communities hadn't been involved in forest management planning. So there's a requirement, and we're developing plans to make sure we get out to the communities, particularly Aboriginal communities, and develop and get their input into our forest management planning.
There seems to be a real push now for certification, and there's a number of different certification processes out there, like the Canadian Standard Association and then, of course, FSC. Why have you chosen FSC, and what does it do for you as a company and also, I guess, for forestry in general?
Well, we think FSC is a really good fit for our management philosophy of environmental protection and socioeconomic performance as well. And we really think the FSC logo, which is that checkmark and tree logo that you might have seen, is recognized worldwide as a symbol of good forest management. There is interest among our customers to be able to purchase FSC-certified product, and we think it provides us with market access opportunities that will enable products from well-managed forests to get an advantage in the marketplace. So, I mean, it's a market-based conservation solution.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cheryl.
That was Simon Dyer, a forest ecologist with Alberta Pacific Forest Industries. Getting FSC certification was a pretty exciting milestone for pulp producer Alberta Pacific, so it's no wonder that Roger Allman came all the way from New York to join the celebrations. Roger is the managing director of Smartwood, the company that conducted the certification audit.
Well, it's really very exciting for us because Smartwood works with 1,300 clients around the world in more than 50 countries. And of all of those clients in all those countries, this is the single largest property that we've certified. And that's a great thing for Alberta. It's a great thing for Canada. But it really sends, more than that, it sends a signal around the world to all of the companies in this sector that if a major player like ALPAC does this, everybody else should sit up and take notice, and it's going to have a big positive impact on forestry around the world.
What are some of the things in terms of doing the actual audit that set this land base apart from perhaps some of the others that you've looked at?
Well, as I said, it's very large. I mean, this property is 5.5 million hectares, which is huge. It covers 9% of the province of Alberta. It's almost a mind-boggling size. And because of its size, there are obviously a lot of different uses of the land on the property. There's oil and gas activities going on, particularly in the northeastern part of the property, in the oil sands area. And in the rest of the property, there's also exploration for oil and gas itself. And then there are other interests. There's obviously some protected areas, and there's a lot of people who were very interested in what the size of those protected areas was going to be in the outcome of this process.
What has Smartwood learned from this process?
Well, this process has only reinforced our long-held opinion that stakeholder engagement is really critical to a good and high-quality and durable certificate. If we had not gone out and reached out and engaged stakeholders of all kinds throughout this region, this certificate would not have the value that it has today, because now we can say, and the company can say with great pride, that this certificate is something that reflects the input of everybody who cares about what this company does.
One of the things that you had to do was actually remove the area that is where oil sands activity is taking place in order for this certification to go ahead. Why?
Well, obviously the area in which the oil sands activity is taking place is treated rather differently from the area in which the primary use is forest management. The oil sands extraction is something that we will be studying with the company over the years to see to what degree it is possible to restore those locations after the extraction has taken place. It is certainly the company's belief that it is possible to do that, and if over the years we observe and determine that that can be done in a proper fashion, then we may well include that part of the property in the certificate.
What's next for Smartwood?
Well, Smartwood continues to grow around the world. As I mentioned, we are in more than 50 countries around the world, and we continue to grow in a lot of places. But one thing that we're going to do is we're going to take this great step that ALPAC has taken and try to get many other companies to follow ALPAC's lead. ALPAC, as I said, is a leader. It's a pioneer. It's really in the vanguard. And it'll be important for other companies in this sector to do what ALPAC has done.
Thank you very much, Roger.
Thank you.
That was Roger Allman of New York, managing director of the audit firm Smartwood. Also at the certification ceremony was Anthony Marcel. Anthony is the president and CEO of the Forest Stewardship Council of Canada. He sees the certification of ALPAC's operations as a big step forward for the Forest Stewardship Council.
It means all kinds of things for FSC Canada. The most immediate one is it means a 50% increase in the number of hectares certified in Canada to the FSC standard, from roughly 10 million to 15 million. It puts Canada in the number one position in the world, jumping ahead of Sweden as the country with the largest certification. But more importantly, what it means, it adds to the momentum. There's a real momentum in Canada around FSC, and this adds to it in all kinds of ways.
What was involved in ALPAC actually getting the FSC certification?
A great deal was involved, and the reason for that is that the FSC certification involves what we call four chambers. We have Aboriginals, labor and social groups, industry, and environmentalists sit around the table with nobody in charge, least of all us. We just mediate and facilitate. And those four groups are the people who come up with the standard to which ALPAC has gotten itself certified. So the standards are the setting of the standard is complicated to start with. But then the actual audit to check to see when ALPAC steps forward voluntarily, because it's totally a voluntary system, and says, we've decided to get certified to FSC, they do the work. And when they think they're ready, they call on an independent auditor. It's not connected to us. And that independent auditor, just like any financial audit, comes and they take our standard and they go and they sit with ALPAC and to check to see if have they really complied. But then they go out to the other groups. They go to the environmentalists and to labor and to the First Nations to ask them, you know, has ALPAC done all the things they're supposed to? And that's tough, you know, because any one of those groups can say, well, no, I'm not happy with what they've done. And, you know, it's a very, you know, you're very vulnerable when you put yourself into a position like that. So it takes a lot of confidence and a lot of guts on ALPAC's part to know that they really have done the work to then subject it to that kind of a spotlight.
It's good that there's a certification process there, and okay, now the company has the logo that it can put on its product. But are people actually looking, are consumers actually looking for the FSC logo when they buy?
Not in the street. If you talk about consumers as the person in the street, no. We're back like recycling was in 1985. If you know, in 1985, the recycling movement existed, that Mobius loop, the logo existed, but most people had no idea what you were talking about. And you'd go into printers to get your business card, as I did in 1985 in New York City, and they had no idea what I was talking about and didn't want to know about it. So in terms of an on-the-street consumer, that's where we are today. But in terms of the people who are real buyers of paper, most of them are aware of the fact that there is certification. Some of them are asking for it. The companies that have declared themselves to be practitioners of what we call corporate social responsibility are looking for ways of proving that they are walking the talk, and buying certified paper is one of them. So you get companies like Home Depot and IKEA and Kinko's and the National Bank of Canada, and you know, I could go on with a fairly long list. They are out there telling their suppliers, you know, we want certified paper, and they're doing it, and that's going to grow.
You're relatively new to the Forest Stewardship Council. Why did you get involved?
I got involved because if you go back one step before what I was doing, just before FSC, I spent 15 years working on industrial and urban environment health and safety, and I recognized that we weren't making enough progress in terms of companies voluntarily, because our approach was economic. You know, we didn't go to companies and say, you've got to protect the environment better. We went to companies and said, we can help you save money, and we did, and we would document that. And we would publish the results of these case studies. They were done, you know, with rigorous baseline cost accounting and so on, and there wasn't any voluntary take-up. The companies that took it up were the ones on whose doors we knocked. And I recognized that something was missing. You know, if this was making money for the companies that were doing it, and the companies that weren't picking it up voluntarily, something was missing from the equation. So I went into tax reform, because I learned over those years that there was a lot of taxes that mitigated against environmental policy. So I spent 5 years trying to change tax system. And it's like banging your head against a stone wall. And when somebody came along to me and said, listen, there's this group called Forest Stewardship Council. They're looking for someone with some experience in social marketing and so on. I saw an opportunity to get my hands around something real and tangible, where I looked at it and I knew within minutes of looking at what this was all about, because I'd never heard of it either, that this is something that 5 years from now, if we've worked well, we're going to be able to see a big shift in behavior and in buying patterns. And that opportunity is rare, you know, that you get a chance to work in a movement where you know there's going to be some tangible outcome in a given period of time. And so I jumped in with both feet.
Who else in Canada is FSC certified?
Domtar and Tembec are the major players that have made commitments to get 100% certified all their lands to FSC, and they're well along the way. Last week I was in Lessard, Quebec, where Tembec had a 1.1 million hectares certified, and that was the first public lands in Quebec certified. There are a lot of small woodlot owners who have joined together in cooperatives to get certified. The Eastern Ontario Model Forest, the West Wind, to name just a couple of them, Gordon Cousins and others. But there are, and Nova Scotia, there are a number. So, you know, the number is growing, and there were about 35 printers in Canada are certified now as chain, because our system is not just the forestry practices get certified, but also the flow through of the fiber that comes from the forest, whether it goes into wood or paper products, can be certified, so that people who produce paper or furniture or anything that incorporates fiber can produce a logo certified product. And there are 125 companies that have chain of custody in Canada. So there's a base there, and we're just going to grow that base, you know, like Topsy.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That was Anthony Marcel, President and CEO of the Forest Stewardship Council of Canada. I also spoke with Roger Allman of Smartwood and Simon Dyer of Alberta Pacific Forest Industries. This week, Dr. Peter Robertson will say his final goodbyes to the people at Tech Edmonton and the Research Transition Facility at the University of Alberta. During his tenure over the last few years, Peter has played a big role in changing the face of technology transfer in not just the city of Edmonton, but the whole province of Alberta. And he's presided over the most successful period for the development of spin-off companies as a result of research and innovation at the U of A. Now, Peter has decided to take his management expertise and go back to his roots as a geotechnical engineer.
I've been here 6.5 years, and my term as associate vice president was coming to a close. And I was looking for new opportunities, even though the ones here were very exciting. And the full story is that I had created a spin-off company about 20 years ago. And it had created two additional companies, one of them a company in California. And the company in California has asked me for several years about my interest in going down and assisting them. And it seemed that this was an appropriate time for me to do that, that I'd been here 6.5 years. I think it's time for new leadership to take it into that new direction and to the next level, and time for me to move on and do something different.
What will you do once you go down there?
Well, in the past, a lot of what they've asked me for is my technical knowledge. But in recent years, they've really become to realize that they need a lot of leadership and management assistance too. Typical case of an early stage company, the entrepreneur that started the company was excellent at innovating to get the company started. But now the company is a little bit larger. They've recognized the need for a little bit more discipline and professional advice to grow the company to a much more successful organization. And so it's that combination of my technical background, so I know the technical side of the business, and the management side to help grow the business. And so I think my role will be Chief Operating Officer.
How did you make that transition into the management side of invention and innovation?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, how did 6.5 years ago, when the university approached me to run the Tech Transfer Office, I was a professor here at the university. But prior to coming here, I had worked in industry for about 10 years before entering academia. And I had started that company 20 years ago with one of my graduate students, and I had helped that company grow. And so I had that unusual mixture of a little bit of business background as well as an academic background. And it was those two elements that came together to be useful to run the Tech Transfer Group at the university.
In the 6.5 years that you've been here, you've also seen a lot of changes in the way technology transfer has been set up at the university, and now it's part of, Tech Edmonton. What changes have you seen?
Well, I think one of the biggest ones is the change in the researchers. In my academic career, which spans about 20 years, we've seen quite a big change from the traditional academic approach, which was the focus on teaching and research, and on the research side, focusing on publications. But increasingly, the younger academics coming into the research environment now are looking for a multitude of outcomes from their careers, not just successful teachers and researchers, but also successful business people. They're seeing that sometimes their research has commercial applications, and they would like to see that, and sometimes they would like to remain engaged in that business side of the results of their research. So that's one side, is just the academic side. The other side that I think I've helped create is the more partnership approach to technology transfer and commercialization. Historically, it was always an internal university activity focused only on the university, and focused a lot on licensing the technology out to existing large companies, which often, of course, didn't reside here in Alberta and maybe didn't even reside in Canada. Whereas in recent years, there's been more of a focus to build regional economic development. And so where appropriate, to try and start companies that can take those technologies and develop them locally. So that got us into starting new companies. And that, by, I think, default, got us thinking more in terms of partnering with the community, and that led to the creation of Tech Edmonton, which is a joint venture between the city through Edmonton Economic Development and the University of Alberta.
With Tech Edmonton just being a little over a year old now, what would you see as being the most important things coming out of this collaboration?
One of the important things is the city and the university working together. I mean, the university is a huge engine inside the community. And when you look back historically, universities were somewhat remote. You know, they often use that phrase, ivory tower. And it was a statement that implied that they were remote, isolated areas. But I think universities have realized now that they have to be part of the community, both at teaching and research. And on the research side, it's this partnership between the city, the business community, and the university that I think is going to make the biggest impact.
What are the plans for the next little while? I know there's a new building coming.
Yes, the university's working with the city on the possibility of acquiring the Bay Building, and that a major element of that Bay Building would be to move our research transition facility downtown into that building, and Tech Edmonton would be a primary tenant in that RTF facility, and it would manage the facility. So certainly in the next couple of years, one of the big things, of course, would be our move downtown, which again I think is a measure of how the university is reaching out and partnering with the community.
Whenever you and I run into each other in the hallway here, because my office is also in the research transition facility, you always ask me, how do you like it here? How's it going for you? Why is that so important, the way that you have things set up?
Well, I think in any organization, particularly if it's a service organization, and both the Tech Edmonton and the Research Transition Facility are service. One's an organization, one's a facility, but it's all around services. And so any good service organization has to constantly ask their clients about, how are we doing? You know, is this the right thing that you need for your business? And so, yes, I ask a lot of people, how's it going? Is there anything that we should be doing, or what do you need, or how is the building operating?
What are the things that stand out in terms of what you have here in the facility?
I think the key thing was the fact that the synergy of the networking is that we have enough people in the building that they bump into each other at frequent intervals, and so they start to learn from each other. So rather than the traditional sense that you mentor businesses by spending time with them, it's a team effort in a way, is that you learn to grow your business not just from the direct mentoring you get from, say, our staff, but also the people you bump into the building that have connections, that give you advice, and so your own network grows through the network of people you meet in the building.
And you have a great coffee shop.
That's the key. One of the best decisions we ever made was to move Stir Crazy in, and those ladies have done a fabulous job in creating the heart of the building.
Peter, it's been a pleasure knowing you, and I wish you all the luck when you move to California.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
That was Dr. Peter Robertson, the departing CEO of Tech Edmonton and soon-to-be management mogul in California. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Ducks Unlimited Canada, Alberta Ingenuity, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Research Council, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Calgary Technologies Inc., ICOR, the Informatic Circle of Research Excellence, the Alberta Conservation Association, Science Alberta Foundation, Alberta Innovation in Science, Alberta Gaming Research Institute, and the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.